Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
After a long weekend of entertaining family and friends at your home, things can get dirty. Well, thankfully, there's Brush Hero to tackle those tough cleaning jobs. Well, Brush Hero is water-powered, and it's a cleaning and detailing tool that connects to any standard garden hose. That's a product you're going to love because it actually really works. It's fun, fast, easy. It's an efficient way to clean. It's also American-made. I love that. A huge plus. You can use Brush Hero to clean virtually anything, boats, bikes, tools, grills, patio furniture, and more. Brush Hero is a great gift for Father's Day or if you're shopping for a car enthusiast, a motorcyclist, mountain biker, or really anyone who loves smart American-made products. At BrushHero.com, they have a large selection of accessories, soaps, gift sets, and bundles. Something for every budget. So what are you waiting for? Right now, my listeners can get 15% off everything at Brush Hero. Visit BrushHero.com/pages/Laura and use code Laura at checkout. BrushHero.com.
Your life. Your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
This is the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you're with us. We have an amazing, amazing show for you. The ongoing crisis at our border. We're going to be naming names, who's responsible, who's actually the hero in this scenario, if there's any hero, and what the media are doing to facilitate an all-out complete transformation of the country by illegal means. That's what this is. It's one big power grab happening day after day, week after week, month after month. And I want to thank all of our sponsors, Brush Hero, they're awesome, Delta Animal Rescue and Genucel. They, among others, help provide this podcast to you free every week. Remember them all, Brush Hero, Delta Animal Rescue, and Genucel. You'll be hearing more about them throughout this podcast. This is a shocker. Okay, I was talking to my kids the other day about California because I have a lot of family out in California. I have nephews and other family members and just lots and lots of friends. Some of you might have heard that when I was studying for the bar exam, after I finished law school, I had intended to move to California. So I took the California bar and I'd spent time out in San Diego and loved San Diego especially. So took the California bar. Luckily, I passed it. And I'd planned to go to California. Then I was clerking, and then one thing led to another. I ended up staying in Washington. But I just had such a visceral love for the state. Obviously, the beauty, the outdoors, the ocean, just the history of California. There's just California has so much to offer, and much of it for obvious reasons, especially the first time I saw it was, I think, 1984. Was the first time I saw, maybe 83, was the first time I ever visited California, and I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I was like, people actually live this way? This is unbelievable. And it wasn't, Beverly Hills. It was just the sheer beauty and the grandeur of the state. And so that was in the 80s, and California was run by Republicans. So this was, remember Reagan had been governor for two terms in the 60s, before he ran for president. And then years later, you had people like Pete Wilson and others, just an incredible contingent of strong conservatives beyond just Orange County. California had a strong Republican leadership, and it was just really impressive place. So you fast forward just 30 years, and the state is totally transformed. This is what the country will look like if Democrats have their way. Now, when I say that, what do I mean? I don't mean the oceans and the mountains and all the beauty. I mean the dysfunction. I mean the homelessness. I mean the high taxes. I mean the out-of-control regulations. I mean the catering to illegal immigrants instead of taking care of your own people. Check this out. This piece just came out yesterday. California homeless population soars as California officials fight HUD regulations to free up public housing. So the Department of Housing and Urban Development announced in April that it was in the process of drafting new regs to bar illegal aliens from public housing. The reactions from pro-illegal alien politicians were, outrage. They're happy to have illegal immigrants in public housing. So Maxine Waters, of course, Congresswoman from L.A., says, that was cruel. San Diego Congressman Juan Vargas says mean-spirited, xenophobic. said the Legal Aid Society's Judith Goldener. The latest attack on immigrant families is an effort to strip them of the fundamental human right to housing. So you notice how they're adding all these rights into what is a human right? So now it's human right is migration. You can migrate anywhere. Housing, health care, education from pre-K through college. That's a human right. So you add that all up. What does that cost? Of course, billions and billions of dollars. So now when the news broke that homelessness in L.A. County alone is up 12% over the same time last year, 16% in the city of L.A., County Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas, all he could say was he was stunned by the figures. We're stunned by the data. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti was described by the L.A. Times as more upbeat about the news. How can you be upbeat by the number of homeless increasing by 16%? It's crazy. An estimated 59,000 people countrywide are homeless, with 36,000 of them, countywide, I mean, obviously, in L.A., 36,000 of them are camped out on the upbeat mayor's streets. So they're living on the streets, some of them in tents, some of them just on the street. So you heard Drew Pinsky, Dr. Pinsky, who's on my show last week, and he's pretty sanguine, but he's an L.A. resident. And like so many others, again, he's not a political guy, but about the disease being spread, about the human waste in the streets, much like we've heard about San Francisco with the needles and the human waste and so forth. This is what he said.
Tuberculosis is exploding. Rodent-borne, we are one of the only major cities in the country that does not have a rodent control program, and sanitation has broken down. We had a typhus outbreak last summer. We will have a typhus outbreak this summer. I'm hearing from experts that bubonic plague is likely. It's already here. The entire population is at risk.
But
this
is, but
could
where are
be
the politicians?
A very serious summer.
The liberal politicians
in California care about people.
They're
negligent, disgustingly negligent. It's almost like, as I was driving over tonight, I thought, do they want the people on the streets to die? Is that really they don't care if they all die?
That's
is that
compassion.
Really where we are now?
I don't think I've ever heard him or seen him, and I've known him for 20 years, more upset and outraged than he was on my show, on the Ingram Angle. Think about what the Democrats are doing to this country. We are now having to house, feed, clothe, and educate the world. Anyone who comes here across our border illegally or claims this phony claim of asylum now in California is entitled to these, quote, human rights. Not the human rights of getting any type of due process or you get your hearing. That's different. I'm talking about they want public housing. They want translation services, meaning if you're Congolese and you're French speaking, if you're Spanish speaking, if you're Arabic speaking, if you're speaking Mandarin, you must have county subsidized translation services at every level of education, the judicial system, and governmental services across the board. Think about that burden. So now the cost of health care for illegals from the ages of 19 to 25, that's the new legislation that was signed into law in the new budget deal in California. From 19 to 25, so those are adults. Used to be that just kids get free health care, called Med-Mal in the state. Now it's 19 to 25-year-olds. Of course everyone's going to come. And they're estimating that that will only cost, $98 million a year. Now, how many of you believe that figure, $98 million a year? That's the biggest joke I've ever heard. Of course it's not $98 million a year. I mean, they estimated by, I can't remember how bad the estimate was for the bullet train in California that finally went belly up. They decided to pull that project. But that was way over budget. So this, why I'm trying to bring this up to you in the way I'm talking about it, and Dan Patrick will join us, the lieutenant governor of Texas, they're on the front lines in this crisis. And so many others that we've talked to. We're going to also talk to Border Chief Agent Chief Raul Ortiz, who's going to join us from Del Rio. I had a chance to meet all of them a couple months ago when I was there. We are telling you how our country nationwide, coast to coast, will be. It's not just limited to California and Texas, guys. This is going to be nationwide. We're seeing communities like Portland, Maine transformed. St. Paul was a Catholic community in Minnesota. It's now a majority Muslim Somali community of 90,000 Somalis. The largest population of Somalis living outside of Africa is now in St. Paul. Now, a lot of them are really good people, legally here. They were legal refugees who came. I understand that. We should have refugees in the country. But we have to think about how we assimilate people in the nation as well, and how that will affect our own history, our own community, our own healthcare system, et cetera. Ilhan Omar, congresswoman, is from, she's an American citizen. She's from, she was born in Somalia, but is now an American citizen. So she's a congresswoman from St. Paul area where the Somalis were all brought. You know what I was wondering? The idea that everybody is settled in the same place instead of dispersed across the country, instead it's the Congolese, there's a Congolese community in Portland, Maine, so let's send them all there. So what happens? You don't really assimilate. You speak your own language. You have your own media. You have your own political power. And then, boom, it all changes, right? So instead of saying, look, maybe we should send people all across the country, then they have a better sense of the whole history of the country. They get to learn. That's where we are.
I lived in Jersey City for about a year.
Muslim.
And I saw – I lived in kind of a bad part of town. It wasn't great. There were a lot of homeless people. I lived near a halfway house. But about once a month or so, I would always see a bus drop off a bunch of people. And I didn't know who they were. And I later figured out that they were migrants, that they had been bussed up from the border. This is back in 2017. And they had just been – they just get dropped off on the side of the street. I'm not sure exactly where they went. But like I said, once a month or so, just right kind of near my apartment, they would just get dropped off. They had a bunch of bags and stuff. And they were all migrants. They didn't speak English. I tried asking, you know, who are you?
Oh, so those were migrants because they have a big – a Middle Eastern population in northern New Jersey, mm-hmm. Patterson, and those were old blue collar towns.
Yeah.
Now there's a very big Muslim population, mostly from Pakistan and other communities in the Middle East. Very much changed over the last 30 years. And again, we're for legal immigration. We believe in the wonders of legal immigration. But the problem that we're having now is that we have such a large influx of illegal immigrants that you don't even have time to catch up with the assimilation for people who are here legally, let alone the ones who are here illegally. And so it's, and then you're getting giving benefits to illegal immigrants that normally would go to legal residents. While we still have homeless people, now we have 16,000 homeless people living in their cars in LA County as well. That's the new piece that came out. Yeah, 16,000 in Los Angeles County living in their cars. But let's put the welcome mat out for all the illegal immigrants in California, sanctuary state. By the way, you know I love my dogs. I love animals. I'm sure I'm going to run some type of sanctuary myself someday. And I think that the way we treat those who are most vulnerable, the elderly, the infants, the unborn, and animals who can't protect themselves, the way we treat them says a lot about who we are as people. This is why I support and I love the folks at Delta Animal Rescue and Animal Sanctuary. It's the largest no-kill, care-for-life animal sanctuary of its kind in the world. And their super sanctuary is home to more than 1,500 animals that have been abandoned. And you can help keep this beautiful mountaintop ranch going to continue its mission of compassion by including Delta Rescue in your estate plans. 100% of your donations go directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue Super Sanctuary. For more information on Delta Rescue's tax-saving estate planning options, just visit deltarescue.org/Laura. Again, deltarescue.org/Laura to learn more about the great benefits of your estate contribution. Donate today at deltarescue.org/Laura.
Sad that when you think of it, Mexico is doing more for the United States as of now than Congress and then specifically the Democrats. They have to get their act together. They have to work and get something done because you get a tremendous problem at the border. You have people pouring in, and it means crime, it means drugs, it means so many other things. We're building the wall. We're going to have close to 500 miles of wall built by the end of next year. That's a lot, and we're moving along very rapidly. A lot of good things are happening, but I want to thank Mexico, and we do have one other thing that will be announced at the appropriate time, but they have to get approval from their legislative body.
You are listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you're with us, as always. And, of course, many of you know that I've been covering this border issue and immigration and the attempt to push amnesty for about 20 years. This has been going on for decades, this problem of cross-border traffic that is illegal in nature, benefiting the cartels, benefiting the drug and human traffickers, and hurting our country, changing the country in ways that nobody voted for, and a complete slap in the face to those legal immigrants who, as we know, go through the process because they love the country and they respect the country enough to follow her laws. So as the president was welcoming the NASCAR folks to the White House, he made that comment about how ironic is it that Mexico is now doing more than the U.S. Congress. He's absolutely right. In an afternoon, Congress could fix this. But they refuse to do it because their goal is to change the country any way they can. They can't win electorally. They want to change it demographically or bring so many new people into the country that don't have an affinity for our history or our founding that they'll be able to snooker them on socialism. So he's right about that. And we'll see if this all works. But the president used tariffs because it was a last resort. 140,000 people coming across the border who were apprehended just in the month of May alone. Joining us now is Lieutenant Governor of Texas to talk about this tariff question. And the Democrats' new line, by the way, is, well, the president created this crisis. And so then he used tariffs to try to address a crisis he created. Lieutenant Governor Patrick is with us now. Dan, it's great to have you with us. First, your response to this new line we're hearing over the last 48 hours or so, that there's nothing new here. Mexico had already been doing all of this. And so what's the big deal?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you, Laura, for being on this issue. You and I have talked about this for the last two decades, on and off the air. And one of the things that concerns me now, not enough people like yourself are talking about it. It's being buried by a lot of the media now as a story, as other stories pop up. And on the political side, I don't hear enough Republicans talking about this issue to keep it in the forefront, what's happening. In terms of what the Democrats are now saying, it's just foolish, Laura. Look, Mexico has not been helping. I can tell you, they have not been helping. If they were helping, the numbers would not have mushroomed for over the last year to where we're up 2,000% in 1 month in some of our border cities. Obviously, that's not helping. They've done the great, Matador move and just waved the cape and let everyone through. So I was one of the few, and you and I have talked about this, one of the few Republicans, period, in the country who stood with the president on this tariff idea. And tariffs are a strong tool. I don't want to say the last resort, but an effective tool when needed. And it was needed now. And I'm concerned about the Texas economy, of course, how it's impacted. But it's pay me now or pay me later. And the cost of, if the tariffs had gone on at 5% that would have started this week, pale in comparison, Laura, to what we're paying in Texas now, what the country is paying, not to mention the culture that's changing, the democracy that's changing, the human lives that are impacted on our side of the border, and the humanitarian crisis for those taken advantage of. And so the Democrats gave him no choice. No one's helping him. Even the Republicans aren't standing up as the way they should. So I think this has brought Mexico to the table, at least now. We will see what they do. And I think he's holding this above them. And one thing I thought about this yesterday, Laura, is that the Mexican president now understands the president is serious about following through and holding firm because they're looking at what he's doing with China. It's not like this is brand new for Mexico. Well, will he really stick to his guns? Yeah, he'll stick to his guns. Mexico can solve this problem in a major way for us. And we all talk about there are great partners, and they are great trading partners with Texas, and they are. But they're not helping us secure our border.
Oh, I can say to all these people who think, well, Trump's bluffing, and I interviewed him in France before the D-Day ceremony, and I asked him,
by the way.
Thank you. And I asked him, you know, what can Mexico do? He said, basically, they know what they're going to have to do. And if they don't, the tariffs are going to be in place next Monday. And he was 100% serious. Yes, and so the idea that he was bluffing is a total joke. I mean, you're right. The Chinese don't think that.
No, they don't think it. The problem in Mexico, Laura, is look, it's so heavily controlled along the border region and in many regions of the country by the drug cartels. So you have a government that is going to have to do battle with the drug cartels because the people smuggling business is huge for them. The cartels are making not more than they're making pushing drugs, but they're making a significant amount of their revenues from the individuals that are crossing this border. When you see people coming in, as we talked about on your show, from Africa, from South America, from Cuba, from China, how do you think they're all getting here? Who's arranging those flights? Who's picking them up at the airport? Who's giving them the map to or the meeting place to join a caravan or how to get from wherever they land across the border in southern Mexico and all the way up and where to go in San Antonio and who to contact? This is you don't come from the Congo. You don't come from Angola in the middle of Africa and figure things out. Heck, I can't go on a vacation. I've been to Europe many times like you have. You know, if I go to vacation now, I need someone to help me plan it out. You know, these are people that are coming, and some of them, by the way, Laura, look like they are of means. I know many of the people are coming from China. Young people look like they are of means, and a few from Africa. But the overwhelming majority, you know, they didn't get here on their own.
Well, and also,
just wake up one day in Africa and say, I'm going to end up in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, no, it's a big business. It's a big business. There are ads on the radio. There are ads in the local sites, news sites they go to in the Congo and other countries in Africa. And one of my producers last night before we went on air, she said, well, Laura, if these 500 Congolese and more coming apparently from Kinshasa, the capital, are able to get here, then why would we think terrorists ultimately wouldn't use this pathway? I mean, why wouldn't we think that?
Yeah, and why would we think that the drug cartels would make a deal with them? These are not people who have any moral base whatsoever. Do they care? Are they going to do a background check on who's giving them a check for, you know, some of these people are crossing the border paying the cartels $25,000, $50,000 per person. The ones coming the furthest, by the way, are paying the most. Laura, this is what really, when I was on your show last, it's so concerning.
It's so upsetting
to me because I see us losing our country. Look, you know, here's a real interesting just little factoid that's a point of interest. In Texas, like everywhere else, you know, we rate the local newscast. You know, in Texas it's 10 o'clock. In the East and West Coast, you know, it's 11 o'clock news. But today, of the five top stations, the first two are Spanish-speaking stations. The English-speaking stations in Houston, Texas, the third, fourth largest city in the country, in a county that would be the 25th largest state in the country if it were Houston's and Harris County, if it were a state, the number one and two number states, news stations at night are Spanish-speaking. What does that tell you about how our culture is being impacted? I used to be a news anchor at one of those stations back in the 80s. And, of course, it was before Spanish-speaking stations, but, you know, it was 96% share of the audience watching television. Today, the Spanish-speaking station, the number one station, is doubling the number one English-speaking station, and that's fine. I'm not. Look, I love the Hispanic culture, but a wonderful people. But the people who are coming here, that are infiltrating our country, Laura, are changing our culture, and they're not necessarily in all cases bringing their, you know, the American values with them, values on capitalism. They're not bringing an educational background with them. The vast majority, you know, a 16-year-old kid from Guatemala walks into our schools because we have to educate him. We can't put him in a fourth grade class. It has to be age appropriate. And so we put him in a class with other 15 or 16-year-olds. He's gone in a year. We've invested all this money into this kid. He's gone because he can't catch up. The education system is so far behind. One out of five of our 5.5 million kids, Laura, in our public schools are not speaking English, are not proficient in it. The cost to our taxpayers in Texas over America is incredible.
Well, listen to this.
We cannot open our arms up to the 100 million people who want to come to this country, according to Gallup poll, 150 million around the world. That's half of our population. And the Democrats say, come on in, because they want to steal this country from us.
Yeah. Well, the traffickers are reaping up to $2.3 billion in illegal immigration. A big piece came out yesterday. The report was titled Human Smuggling and Associated Revenues, by the RAND Corporation, which is not a political organization, it's nonpartisan. They said that Central American crime lords, gangs, and small-time operators profit up to $2.3 billion moving illegals into the United States. They collect even more from what are called road taxes used by smugglers, according to this new study.
Yes.
Migrants paying $3,000 to $10,000 each can choose pay-as-you-go or all-inclusive packages that include travel from their home, not just through Mexico, said the report. And smugglers offer specialized services for children, pregnant women, and the elderly that reduce exposure to risks and do not require extensive physical activity, such as scaling walls or extended hikes through remote terrain. So this is like a club, some kind of club travel, like where you, it's actually so sophisticated that it's an all-inclusive package offered now. This is like regular tourism. It's just called migration tourism.
Yeah, and they're teaching you to climb walls and dig tunnels, and these are not options you get when you take your normal cruise or side trip on a family trip. And Laura, if this were not so serious and deadly to our country, deadly to our Constitution, deadly to our way of life, I've been criticized by this so many times by the media.
They don't want to talk about the diseases. They don't want to talk about the TB.
Years ago, there are articles where I talked about this, and I was slammed for what the disease that was coming to this country. Do you think these people from Central America have ever had a vaccination for a variety of diseases? The poor Border Patrol and local law enforcement has to deal with these folks, and they're exposed to it. And you know, the other thing that people don't get, Laura, is how as many peoples we have on the border, how thinly we're stretched. Brewster County is a county down in far southwest Texas. It is in land mass three times the size of Delaware. Now, Delaware is not a big state. I'm from Maryland, so I know the size of it. But three times the size of Delaware, the sheriff there has 9 people. That's it. That's what he's got, 9 people covering an area three times the same as Delaware. And in that region with Border Patrol down there, the one region, they have 500 agents. Sounds like a lot, but they're covering 500 miles. And it's not like that's one trooper a mile, divided by 3 shifts, by the way. So you don't have 500 people out there at a time. And people say, well, 1 mile, one trooper can cover that, get in this car. No, we're not talking about a super highway they're on. We're talking about the wilderness down there. You can't see, 20 yards. More than a mile that you're covering.
Yeah,
And so the cartels, even in those areas, they're sending these family units, many fraudulent, many children are being hired to come over, and they go back and they bring more kids, put them in sex trafficking, or just peddling those kids to across this country. Some of these aren't real family units. Most of them are, but many are not. And these kids are, you can tell by they're frightened.
I saw some that didn't look like family members. When I was there, there was one child in particular, and the father had his hand on her knee, and she looked, and I was very friendly, so I don't think it was I that she was afraid of. I don't think so, but the Border Patrol is so overwhelmed, Dan, that they can't really do much. So it's just basically constant triage. That's all it is. Yeah.
It's wide open. It's like those scenes on, the day after Thanksgiving, when they open the doors at midnight at the local mart, and people come just crashing in through the doors.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening on them. They're just crashing in. One of the things that just puzzles me, Laura, we give whomever the president is, Trump, Obama, Bush, Clinton, it doesn't matter. We give them incredible power to protect our country if we are being invaded or if we are at risk. He does, a president doesn't have to go to Congress to declare war first before they have a strike back against our people who are putting us in harm's way. And yet we tie the hands of a president that he can't work without Congress permission to shut this down. I mean, it's amazing. We give the president the ability, if he has to fire a nuclear weapon, and we don't give them the power.
Well, they do have the power. I think Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, has pretty much found the emergency powers granted to the president by Congress back in the mid-70s is more than sufficient to at least use the tariffs and other extraordinary measures.
But here's my point. If we were actually under attack, we don't have to go through the courts and go through 6 months of legal wrangling or nine months while we're under siege. The president can act. And in fact, he has to act. In this case, yes, he may end up ultimately winning the case in court, but the president should be able to act immediately to secure our borders. The president's doing everything he can. The Democrats are blocking him. Mexico has not been helping. Let's see if they really, turn and change here. We'll know pretty quickly. Not enough Republicans are standing with him. And Laura, when we lose Texas, and I'm not going to say when we lose it, because I don't intend as lieutenant governor of the state to lose it to the Democrats. We will win in 2020 with the president, and we will hold our own. But if and when that ever happens, once you take the electoral votes of California and New York and add them together, there is never, ever again a Republican in the White House, ever again. And so that's the prize. They've taken California, which was once a Republican state.
Yeah, we've talked about this before.
And their focus is now on Texas and whatever means they can. And they're going to pour in hundreds of millions of dollars from Holder and Soros and Obama, and redistricting and trying to take the Texas House and take more congressional seats and changing the maps. All those things that we're going to battle in 2020. But the bottom line is they're coming for Texas. This is not caring about all these people coming here. And even if you did care, the Democrats are great at caring about other people's problems with other people's money.
This is power.
The idea that we're going to give now California health care for every 19 to 25-year-old here illegally, where is that coming from? Nobody has that right. So this is all about them taking the country over. And once, by the way, if you ever lose those three states in combination, Laura, then they don't even have – they're not campaigning to those of us who are pro-life or those of us who believe in religious freedom or those of us who believe in secure borders or those of us who want a strong military or those of us who believe in capitalism. They're not even trying to campaign to – those people in America now. Imagine when they can't lose the White House, and it's only an intra-party fight.
No, it's over. It's over. We've talked about this before. It's completely over. It's a game of power. Dan Patrick, Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Texas. Thank you, Dan, for your perspective, as always. I really appreciate it. And by the way, a lot of people are messaging me because it's summertime, and I'm so happy that so many of you have tried all of the great Genucel facial products for your skin, which are awesome. They're made by my friends at Chamonix. And Robin from Lubbock, Texas, speaking of Texas, said, I put the Genucel jawline cream on my neck 2 or 3 days ago. She said, it's the best her neck has looked in 20 years. People have told her face looks younger. She's totally blown away. Well, I'm telling you, the Chamonix MDL technology that's in the Genucel brand new jawline treatment specifically targets that delicate skin on your neck area for tighter, healthier, and the younger looking skin. And you're going to see yourself looking better in the mirror, and you'll thank me like so many already have. And you can see this for yourself and try this for yourself. It's really easy. Now, all you need to do is text now, and Classic Genucel for bags and puffiness is free with your order. Okay. So you text EYES1 to 77453 or go to genucel.com. Okay. So you'll start seeing the results in 12 hours or less. You'll get the Genucel for bags and puffiness free with your order. Okay. Again, text EYES1 to 77453 or go to genucel.com and you'll receive 2 free gifts and free shipping now. Genucel.com.
We've had over 100,000 migrants come through here since January of this year. We're number 2 after McAllen, Texas. This whole tariff issue and related to migration would never have occurred if Congress had gotten their act together over the last 30 years and developed a little intestinal fortitude to do what is right on reforming immigration to begin with.
Well, that is the mayor speaking of El Paso, Texas, DeMargo. And El Paso, remember I interviewed the president there back in February. I believe it was February or January. Now I can't. It's all melding into one, time span here. But we went and traveled there with him. And remember when Beto O'Rourke was doing that competing rally? It was a few thousand people. Trump had like 13,000 people. And Beto was like, oh, I'd take the walls down that are here and just let people come across when they want to. So he just, like, the fencing that does exist in El Paso, which at least slows down the flow and makes it somewhat, well, not even really anymore, somewhat manageable, but it kind of slows things down a little bit. Otherwise, it'd just be a mass rush across the border. He would take those down. So the mayor is exactly right. Congress is purposefully in dereliction of its duty, basic duty to protect the sovereignty of our 50 states and the nation. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast. Delighted you're with us. Joining us now, my friend, Chief Raul Ortiz from the Border Patrol in the Del Rio sector where we were just a few months ago. And he joins us now to give us an update after now we find the number up of Congolese who've come from Africa somehow have made their way up through Mexico to our border. That number is set to be 500 plus after hundreds have already crossed, including in the Del Rio section. He joins us now. Chief Ortiz, it's good to talk to you, my friend. How are you doing today?
Just fine, Laura. Good morning. How are y'all?
I'm good. Tell us what we need to know, because, of course, the last time I was there, it was bad, but it's now just gotten worse.
Yeah, we continue here in the Del Rio sector to see an increase in apprehensions. You know, we're at 230% higher than we were at the same time last year, sitting around 35,000. You mentioned the African nationals or the folks that we're seeing from the continent of Africa. So far, as of yesterday, 726 apprehensions this sector has made alone from about eight or nine different countries, from Angola all the way to Uganda, Somalia, Nigeria. And so it becomes a bit of an issue for us because they're hitting us in multiple locations. And certainly it's problematic, not just for this community, but the communities that they're traveling to.
Chief, the deal that Trump struck with the Mexicans, and I've talked to my sources in the White House about this, they insist that this deal would allow Border Patrol, and it says it's up to Border Patrol now, to drop these people back into Mexico. So once they cross the border, I guess you take their name and you get their case number, and then they're not bused. They're not supposed to be bused to other locations. They're supposed to be dropped in Mexico to wait out their asylum claims. Have you gotten any word about this?
Yes, we have. We're working with our headquarters entities to be able to ensure that Del Rio is certainly considered an opportunity to be able to, you know, deport people or have people wait in a third country like Mexico for an immigration hearing. You know, this is certain the migrant protection protocols are ongoing in some of the other locations that have been a little bit busier than we are. But because our numbers continue to trickle up, you know, I think Del Rio is going to be in consideration to be able to do the same type of process here. We think that's important.
Well, they said absolutely, because I asked specifically about Del Rio, and they said to me 100% when they pick someone up, whether it's on land or in the water, they get their names, they do the same kind of processing, they're brought right back across the border to Mexico, and over time that will drop the numbers significantly. That was a significant change to the way it was done before, where there was a hodgepodge, maybe I think a total of, you know, several thousand people over the last, you know, 5 months were waiting in Mexico. But now it's pretty much everyone who comes into the United States will be able to send back to Mexico, regardless of what country they come from.
Yeah, we're certainly looking forward for any process that will help us deter some of the traffic that we're experiencing. I mean, you look at our numbers, over 20,000 family units and kids in this sector. Last year, it was a small percentage of the number of apprehensions, about 20%. Now they make up almost 60% of the traffic that we encounter out there daily.
Chief, on the issue of drug trafficking, which, of course, is such a huge concern, there's a report out today that I quickly summarized earlier in the show about how the drug cartels are offering these all-inclusive packages to people in other countries. And it's all-inclusive, like they get them from door to border, essentially, for one fee. So they take care of their transportation along the way. They make it easier for children and pregnant women to get through certain parts of Mexico. And the RAND Corporation did a study on the number, on the profit made by the cartels, the gangs, and some of the small time operators within Central America and Mexico, and it's $2.3 billion that they're making from these types of all-inclusive packages and pay-as-you-go packages. Does that surprise you, given what you're seeing?
No, not at all. We see that, human cargo has really taken the place of narcotics for a lot of the cartels and the transnational criminal organizations that we're encountering. You know, they both deal in a commodity. And, you know, when you talk about folks from Central America and across the world trying to come to the U.S. for economic reasons and other reasons, that, you know, that's an endless supply to them. And so these cartels are engaged in the same type of violence if they were crossing methamphetamines or marijuana or cocaine. So it is something that is not alarming to me one bit. I think they're dabbling both in human trafficking as well as narcotics trafficking.
We're talking to the Del Rio Border Patrol chief, and we have such an amazing group of agents across the board throughout the state of Texas and across the southwest border who, you know, I've had a chance to, over the years, meet so many in so many different states in so many different circumstances. And what people, I think, don't stop and think about is the toll on the agents themselves who signed up to do a job and are now having to be, daycare operators, diaper, changers, medical transport facilities. And also, I know because I spoke to some of them, they're concerned about diseases. They're concerned about incubation periods and so forth, Chief. And what can you tell us about the concerns of some of your agents in that regard?
Yeah, certainly not just from our agents, but even from our communities. You know, I've attended several meetings in the last couple of weeks with our community leaders, and certainly all of them, especially when you talk about folks coming from the continent of Africa that could be transmitting communicable diseases, we've seen a bit of an increase in ailments by our agents that are subjected to long periods of time in these centralized processing centers. I'm also concerned about, the health risk that my agents are putting themselves into out in the river in these ranch conditions. And when we've got 100-degree heat coming up here in the next week, we've already executed 407 rescues. These are my agents jumping in the water, rescuing kids, paraplegics, you name it. These smugglers are doing everything they can to pull our agents off their border security mission to be able to rescue these individuals, and we've already experienced 15 deaths. That's that's a 36% increase from where we saw this same period last year. And so all of these things, the health issues, the dangerous conditions that my agents are having to operate in, are awfully concerning, not just to me, but to every chief across the entire southwest border. And every sector is up right now. Every sector is busier than they were last year.
And, Chief, before we let you go, on this idea that, well, this is just a self-generated crisis. The government, by cracking down on immigration or saying they were going to crack down immigration, caused this rush at the border. Do you think that's accurate, or do you think that people are now just understanding that this is big business to get people up to the border, and because there's generally catch and release, that's what they're going to do?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a driver and a pull factor, but I also think the fact that people recognize in these Central American countries and across the world that, you know, we have a gap in our policies. I mean, these African nationals that we have apprehended, almost all of them are family units. We've got the same thing still existing in communities right across the river from us. We have, 1,000 people set up in shelters that are waiting to cross. So this isn't going to stop now unless we do something about this.
Chief, I'm really appreciative of the time you gave us. I know how busy you are. Chief Raul Ortiz, Del Rio Sector. Chief, thank you so much. You're listening to the Laura Ingram Podcast. We're talking about these issues because we care about you, your family, your livelihood, your country, and our country. And we have to do everything we can to wake people up. And, I get criticized of being anti-immigrant. I look at people, I said, is that all you have? Really? So now being for the rule of law is being anti-immigrant. Yeah, I just say, get out of here. Don't even try to level that critique at us. We actually care about the safety and well-being of American citizens. Every person, no matter what color skin or what your background or where you came from, you're here legally. We're here for you. We want to protect you and your family. And this is not protecting anyone.
The truth of the matter is, we need Congress now to step up. I mean, Mexico has actually done more to address the crisis on our southern border than Congress has. And it's time for Congress to step up, to provide the resources. And most importantly, Brett, it's time for Congress to work with this president and this administration and reform our asylum laws, close the loopholes that human traffickers are using to entice people to take the long and dangerous journey north.
Well, yet another perspective that should wake up every politician who's sitting on his or her tuchus instead of doing their job here. But I say this because I care about the country. I care about you, American citizens, legal residents, people who are here in this country legally. You deserve a government that works for you. Other than Trump and a few others, I don't know who's actually doing their job on the federal level on this immigration stuff. I'm talking about elected officials. Not many. They just want to avoid this topic altogether. Oh, by the way, Nancy Pelosi, this was great. I guess this was yesterday. Pelosi was pressed about this statement she made about how the tariffs on Mexico, the threatened tariffs, were just a way to distract everybody. Let's listen.
Are you suggesting that the president's threat of tariffs on Mexican imports is just bad policy or illegal by misapplying the law as you
intend? No, I'm just saying it's bad policy. No, I'm just saying that it's wrong. I don't even think it rises to the level of policy. I think it's notion mongering again, and it's really
notion mongering. What's that mean?
Well, let's face what it is. It's a distraction from the Mueller report, and it served its purpose. Right here we are. Here we are.
Well, there are many things we could say about that soundbite. Number one, she doesn't, sound like she's the Nancy Pelosi of 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. And number two, just on its face, it's absurd. The idea that the president was engaging in these tough tactics with Mexico because of Mueller is, it's actually beyond sad. It's actually scary that Nancy Pelosi engages in this kind of stupid and ill-informed, and just complete misrepresentation. Rhetoric. And it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me because this is where the Democrats are. I would argue, I'd turn that argument around on her and say, you're distracting from the border by holding to Mueller because Mueller is your blanket of protection. Brent in California. Brent, you see this problem in California day in and day out. I spend quite a bit of time myself in California, and I said, as the podcast started, how much the state has changed from the first time I stepped foot in California in 1983. I believe that was the first time I ever went to California. And I thought I had died and gone to heaven because it was just so beautiful. And it is still beautiful, but boy, has it changed big time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just not the same place. I grew up in California. And I tell you what, especially now with this idiot that you have, governor down there, between him, his little lapdog, Javier Becerra, and then the sheriff down there. Politically, with Newsom in there, he's luring in these illegal immigrants as well as the homeless from all over the country.
But I have a question. How is it that the citizens of California think this is okay? I mean, at some point, do we reach a tipping point where they say throw the bums out, or they just keep doubling down on failure by electing these people election after election after election? This is what I don't understand. How does the state not say, whether in English or Spanish, no more, no mas?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think down there you have so many people that are just shuffling from one job to their second Uber job, trying to keep their head above water. It's ignorance and complacency. You talk to business owners, you talk to people that are concerned about the direction of California and how it's changed, and they see it. But, a lot of young people and a lot of the people that are out there just trying to survive, they don't vote. And they're just watching the whole thing circle the drain.
Or they're leaving. A lot of them are leaving California.
Oh, they're leaving in droves, absolutely.
Yeah, because they don't want to pay the taxes. And, now the L.A. is – the homeless problem is out of control. There's human waste problems. There's disease problems. And then you're told that you have to pay. If you don't have health care, your penalties for not having health care in California are going to go fund the illegal immigrants getting health care. I mean, just that alone is enough to send anyone out of the state. I appreciate the call. This is Bernie Sanders on CNN's State of the Union. Let's listen.
The issue here in terms of immigration requires us finally to do what should have been done years ago, and that is pass comprehensive immigration reform.
So amnesty.
To make sure that our young people in this country who are in the DACA program get immediate legal protection and that we have a humane border policy. We need a decent relationship with Mexico. They are our allies, as is the case with Canada. We should not be confronting them every other day.
No, let's just keep it going the way it is, Bernie. Let's just keep this going. When he says comprehensive immigration reform, is that addressing the current crisis? If you said tomorrow, everybody who's in the country illegally can stay and you can work here, do you think that would solve the problem at the border? The answer is no. What would solve the problem at the border immediately is to end and just say, we can't do asylum right now. No asylum. Until we can get a handle on the people and get through all the cases that we have, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of cases, and deport people from the country whose claims are adjudged illegitimate. Until we can do that, we have to do a pause on asylum cases, asylees. You could apply in your home country and you can wait in a queue, but until then, no crossing into the country and claiming asylum. That whole crossing into the country and claiming asylum is a joke, too. That should be, you have to do that in your own country or the first safe country in which you enter, which is Mexico. I think Trump needs to get that part of the deal, too, the safe harbor provision they wouldn't agree to. Mexico wouldn't agree to that. That would really have changed things, but we'll see how this goes.
I wonder if that's what Trump was talking about when he said that Mexico needs something to pass their legislator first. Maybe that's what it is.
I hope so. By the way, there was a piece out which should be an affront to anyone who, you know, has family members who suffered in the Holocaust or who were lost in the Holocaust. There was a piece written this week by Jonathan Katz in the LA Times. Here's the title. Call immigrant detention centers what they really are, concentration camps. Okay, we have Dachau, Auschwitz, Buchenwald, where millions of people were herded into camps, tortured, starved to death, and incinerated and gassed to death. And you're using the phrase, words concentration camps, to reference Border Patrol stations that are and immigrant detention centers, which are crowded because Congress won't do their job. We are actually giving people three meals a day, health care checks, translation services, bus tickets to where they need to go, and that's a concentration camp. I mean, that is and people attack me for saying what I say. This is a concentration camp. A Florida detention center for migrant children is a concentration camp. It's called the Homestead. In El Paso, where, you know, we just heard from that mayor and that soundbite who said this is just an outrage. People herded so tightly into cells that they had to stand on toilets to breathe. Well, children can't be put with adults, so they have to be separated by something called a room wall. So children can be processed, then the adults, and then they're all released. So that's a concentration camp, keeping children separate from adults. Well, what would they have us do? Just release them all into the street so the children can be trafficked? Or putting women with men so women can be raped? What do they prefer? Because Congress won't give its money to even have beds for these people. In some cases, we have no beds at the Border Patrol facilities because they're not meant to house people. These are just quick processing in and out centers. But now it's concentration camps. Man, if you're someone whose family member suffered, died, tortured in the Holocaust, or how about the Muslims being kept in concentration camps in China right now? You don't call those concentration camps, but they can't leave and they're going through re-education. But this is the type of rhetoric we're going to use. They're going to use. And no one will bat an eye, except I'll talk about it on the podcast, and then it'll just go away in the ether. But you can't say that. You can say that we need a better solution. You can advocate for whatever you want to advocate to fix the system. But do not call these places concentration camps where people were gassed to death with an agenda of exterminating an entire race of people. So don't do that. That's not cool. And liberals should be against this. Any liberal should be against that as well. And that's Jonathan Katz. I don't know if Katz is usually a Jewish name, so I guess, you know, it's okay for him to say that. That's the LA Times. Rabidly pro sanctuary city, sanctuary state, open borders, rabidly pro open borders, despite the fact that it's helping destroy the state. So you are facilitating the demise of your own state. Isn't that wild? 140,000 American and allied troops descended on the beaches in Normandy, landed on the beaches of Normandy, paratroopers and amphibious landings. 140,000 people. 140,000 people came into our country last month from other countries. All right, that's it for us. The Laura Ingraham Podcast. Remember, anytime you want to be part of this podcast, just email us at ingraham.podcast@gmail.com. That's ingraham.podcast@gmail.com. America now and forever. The Laura Ingraham Podcast. I want to thank all of our sponsors who are supporting the show. Brush Hero, Delta Animal Rescue, and Genucel. The Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Need a little boost to your self-esteem? Then check out Creating Confidence with Heather Monahan on Podcast One.
I'm so grateful to have you here with me.
Join the upbeat entrepreneur as she helps you figure out the keys to success, from crushing it like Gary Vee to finding self-fulfillment with comedian-turned-life coach Lisa Lampanelli.
And I get out of the car and go, if they see me walking into the tanning place with no makeup on, a house coat and slippers, they're going to be like, she really has fallen. And worse, she has a freaking Nissan Sentra.
Download new episodes of Creating Confidence with Heather Monahan every week on Apple Podcasts or Podcast One.